Good afternoon, everyone. It's Dr. Niger again, our next episode of Psychology Unplugged. As always, I like to start every episode with a heartfelt thank you and appreciation to all of our followers, both here in the United States and abroad. And it really is a distinct privilege to continue to do this program on a weekly basis and continue the passion I have in terms of demystifying and legitimizing mental health and yet instilling a realistic sense of hope that does come with work. But I've seen enough people to be a witness to their success in overcoming sometimes incredibly difficult situations. But this is really a fun thing to do, and I enjoy interacting with people and talking and returning as many emails and messages as I possibly can. So if I haven't gotten back to you, I will certainly make sure I give you contact information and ways to get back to me or reach out to me and do my best to get back to you. So this episode is kind of one that is based on an article that I read recently, and it's also a comment that I've gotten a lot of times after I've done episodes on the personality disorders, specifically borderline and narcissistic. And you know, the common question that's often posed is what are the lingering effects of growing up with a parent with borderline personality, a parent with narcissistic personality, or a parent with just a personality disorder in general? And I don't think that there is one universal answer to that. But I can say that growing up with a parent with a personality disorder is invariably going to adversely impact a young child's developing sense of self and developing personality. And how that manifests can take very different pathways, where some people become I don't want to say victims, but some people get into the, you know, almost the kind of repetition compulsion and embody that same parental style as they grow up, especially in situations where there are no models or interventions to counterbalance whatever kind of toxic parenting may be going on. And by toxic in the sense, I'm saying the pathology from the personality disorder. And there are individuals who have grown up with parents with a personality disorder and take on a completely different trajectory and say, you know what? No, thanks. I'm going my own way. And I guess this is the amazing part of the human condition. And it really begs the question of, reality versus perception. And I think it really, you know, it's more of a philosophical question is, one, does reality truly exist, or is everything just merely perception? And a lot of work in cognitive behavioral psychology is really about changing perception and change the way that we look at things and the way that we interpret things. And as a result, our thoughts change, our behaviors change, and our emotions change. And I think in my work with individuals, especially those who have grown up in an environment where there may have been toxicity or abuse, I think that there is a fundamental innate desire for parental approval, for parental acceptance, and parental love. And I've seen this, and I bear witness to people's stories that they have, you know, endured terrible sexual abuse by a parental figure, but yet there's still that primal desire of wanting love. And sometimes, you know, the abuse that is perpetrated on an individual, if I've worked with people where they believe that they, you know, that was their fault, even as a child. But, you know, to kind of center back to this article, it just struck me because, like I said, a common theme I get from people is, what about this? What about that? And my mom was a narcissist, or my dad was borderline, or vice versa. And this woman wrote an article about, different ways parents, and I hate this term. You guys know I hate this term, but it's the best one I think we got, as opposed to calling it antecedents. It's basically, how parents' words can trigger adult children. And, as adult children, we have more of a sense of autonomy. And we have our education and our careers and a different mindset and our own belief systems. Whether they're adaptive or maladaptive, I think, is not necessarily as important as, can parents still affect us as adults? Absolutely. And, having lost both of my parents, and I was very fortunate to have been raised by a mother and a father who were the epitome of love, who met on a blind date and spent 45 years together and never spent one day apart. And I grew up seeing love and grew up seeing, just peace and transcendence. And I guess, triggering me as an adult child was, even my father was alive, just about, trying to be an inspiration and a motivation. And my mother was, go out in the world and change the world and change it for the better and be to your own drummer. And I guess those things triggered me in a positive way. But, this episode, I'm focusing more on the negative things. And one of the things that the author talks about is giving unsolicited advice. Now, how many of us do that? I think we can all raise our hands, especially those of us who work in the field. We sometimes give unsolicited advice. I think some people feel that it could be helpful, and others, I think, feel it's premature, that they just want to feel understood and validated, devoid of wanting advice. That people in general, I think, whether it's a parent or not, people want to be heard. Then the other things can come, advice or an empathic response or dialogue or stuff like that. But unsolicited advice is something that, she points to as being something that really can be off-putting to an adult child. It's like, I just want to tell you what's going on. Just say, you had a hard day, or I have confidence you can handle that, and I'm just venting. And I think it's also important, if you're on the flip side as a parent, and your child's coming to you, ask them, what do you want from me? Do you want me just to listen? Do you want me to give advice? Do you want me to, comment, unsolicited advice, I think, is something that whether it's a parent or whether it's a friend or whether it's someone we're in a relationship with, I think the end result is we want to be heard. And yeah, I think a part of us, we want advice. I think we want the advice. I think when sometimes the advice we're given, if it aligns with what we're looking for, we might be more inclined to be more receptive to it. But when we're automatically met with more of an autocratic style of "I know better," whether that's spoken or unspoken, or I've been there before, or when I was your age, this is what happened, and I think that can be very off-putting because, like I said, we are storytellers by nature, and sometimes we just want to be heard and we want to be validated. The second point she brings up is when parents remind their children to be grateful. And this, it can generally backfire where, gratitude is a great tool, when a person finds it for themselves, but I think it can be very dismissive when it's mandated by someone else. It kind of sends the message that the parent isn't comfortable with their child's negative feelings and would prefer to just kind of, skip over that to just feeling better. Again, parents are not clinicians. Some of them might be out there, but you know, remember to be grateful. And you know, again, that's something that I've mentioned other episodes that I have worked on myself. And finding gratitude is, I think, a personal journey. But when you're reminded to be grateful, it's almost as if you're being it's almost, I think, it's my perspective, it's being dismissive. Yes, that sucks, but, and you know, my whole perception on yes, but is everything before the but, as soon as the but, just forget about it. You just pay attention to what comes after the but. You know, you're a really nice guy. I had a great time on the date, but I think we would just better be friends. But is kind of like to soften the blow. So, you know, having a parent remind you to be grateful is basically saying, I don't want to hear your problems. And that could be because the problems resonate with the adult parent in terms of something that they are going through or something that they have gone through. Or it could make the parent feel uncomfortable if maybe the issue is with the parent. Maybe the issue is you're addressing something. Let's take an example where, you know, you can find out that mom has borderline personality or narcissistic, and you confront the parent. I could easily see a parent like that saying, be grateful. I put food on the table, and I did this, and I did that. We did that. And it could become a very adversarial dialogue between a parent and a child. But I think when gratitude is mandated on us, that's not always helpful. I think, especially in the situations when we are in a state of pain and we're going to our parents, we're going to a caregiver looking for some solace, some maybe advice, for empathy, for understanding, to just be dismissive and say, you know what, be grateful that you have all those things. Yes, gratitude is a huge part of the human experience. It's something that I think we need to be mindful of. Now, like I say, I walk out of the grocery store every Sunday and say, thank you, God, for allowing us people to afford to have beautiful food. And it really is a change in perspective, but that's coming from within me. It's not something someone tells me to do. And I think as humans, outside of a clinical setting, when anybody tells us what to do, we get in, at least in the Western society, we get into a very defensive stance and mindset. Her third point in terms of what parents can do to trigger their adult children is make jealous comments. And this, I think, applies to like parents whose children may have a better job than they have, may have more finances. And kind of these passive, aggressive comments like, oh, must be nice to have a cushy job. Must be nice people take vacation. Must be nice to be able to send your child to that school. Those kind of comments can make it really hard for, I think, a child to want to continue to share intimate feelings with their parent if they're adults. You know, jealousy is an ugly quality, especially if it's a parent perpetrating that on their child, because as a parent, you want the best for your child. You want the best path for them. And to be jealous, I think, is the antithesis of being a supporting role model in the lives of an individual's child or children. Another one of her triggers, I'm just going off my notes here, making it all about the parent. When an adult child kind of raises an issue and instead of engaging with it or talking about it, the parent automatically makes the conversation about themselves. You know, they're talking about an experience that they had or ignore their child's issues for their own concerns. And, I think it's important as a child to say, you know what, this is about me right now. And I need to reorient back to what I'm coming to you with. And I think, again, this could also automatically feel dismissive. You're telling a story. Well, you know what? I had a boss like that once. And almost it becomes a method or interaction of like one-upmanship. Like, you know, and back to like, you know, be grateful. You don't know how good you have it. So it's Definitely a dismissive comment, but I think in even in relationships, this can be frustrating. If you're on a date or you're talking to a colleague, I think we all have people in our lives that do make it all about themselves, and thinks they think the sun and the moon rise and set with every whim and every everything about the person. And you certainly see these the this specific one making all about the parent in parents with narcissistic and or borderline disorders or traits. It's all about them, and can certainly be very passive aggressive. Another one she points to is jokes, and sometimes in an effort to bring levity or lighten the mood, parents turn to humor during uncomfortable situations. And humor can actually, really do a lot to diffuse situations. But sometimes it can backfire because, again, it could also be dismissive, or a child can perceive that their parent can't deal with a serious matter. And I think this becomes even more, I think a lot of these, and she doesn't necessarily point to this, but I think a lot of these I kind of relate to when I think a child is coming to their parent, especially maybe in just a specific instance, when they're coming to the adult child is coming to the parent with an issue related to the parent. And humor is an effective tool in psychotherapy. It's an effective tool in relationships. I mean, our house, our life, we with is filled with laughter, and laughter is amazing medicine. It releases healing chemicals throughout our body. We have to be very sarcastic family, but with all with love. And we know it's time to be serious. We know it's time to laugh, but we joke and have fun with each other more than anything else. And that is a great breeding ground for healthy relationships. And humor, it can do wonders. But again, it can, if you're the person in distress and you're going to your parent looking for something from them, spoken or unspoken, and them using humor. Again, I could see how that can be dismissive, but this is when you can easily say, can you please knock it off and just wait, let me just and take this seriously. And sometimes people do need that. Another one she talks about is labeling. And an adult child brings a problem to the parent, and the parent comes up with the old, like a childhood label, what's happening. Like, you've always been a procrastinator. You're always quick to anger. You've always been moody. You've always been selfish. You've always been self-centered. You've always been that. And, labels are great in my job, and what I do as a diagnostician with diagnoses, yes, but labeling people in just a human interaction can be incredibly dismissive. And it's really blaming, and it may be, and the label that the parent is bringing up is from yesteryears, but it could also make a child feel that they may have worked very hard to overcome something, and they're talking about something completely different, but a parent regresses back to an old ideology, and they view their lens of their, say, 25-year-old child, they view them from the lens of when they were 8 years old. Which is, again, extremely unfair, but again, it could definitely reduce the likelihood of a child reapproaching if you're just going to put that same moniker back on them, because this child may have been trying to escape that label for years, especially that you're lazy, you're not going to do anything, and you're going to be you're a loser. And I work. These are messages that people tell me, and I'm not pulling this out of an article. I'm not. This is what people say. These are messages and labels that are put on people, just as like labels like you're excellent, you're the most beautiful, you're the smartest, you're the most wonderful, you can do no wrong. Yes, those are messages that can easily breed narcissism. But labeling, I think we try to compensate and try to overcompensate, because most of us don't want to walk around with negative labels, but a lot of people, because they may have heard stuff so long and for so many years, and by people who are in a status of authority, like a parental figure, and if they're saying it, it must be true. And wearing that negative label can be incredibly burdensome, incredibly painful, and people can wear that label and unfairly and unfortunately live their lives by something someone spoke over them. And like I've said, one of the mistakes that all of us make is we believe that what other people say is true. Another one she brings up is awkwardness, where some parents respond to their kids with like gestures, like sitting quietly, turning away, changing the subject, shutting it down. You know, they could turn the TV up, distract, like, I need to go. You know, it's like these, it's like those situations where you could, it's so thick you can cut it with a knife. And it's those weird situations of like, oh man, how do I get out of here? I can't believe that they just said that they just did that, and oh my God. So those awkward situations, I think we've all experienced them. It's like, and a lot of times I think that awkwardness comes when adult children, you know, or maybe are confronting their parent with the elephant in the room that the parent has ignored for the vast majority of their adolescent, maybe childhood, adolescent, and certainly adult life. And another one she brings up is shifting the attention to the parent's anxiety about the issue. And like where parents respond to their child's issues by becoming so overwhelmed with worry, that the child has to stop and support and reassure them. And, you know, they almost hijack the conversation. And I thought this was a great article because I see this. And I hear this probably more anecdotally, not doing much therapy, but in the therapy that I do with individuals with borderline personality, I hear all of this stuff. So this is very true, and it's definitely certainly a way to shut someone down and to make their problems seem diminutive and not important or not essential. And, you know, I don't like the word trigger, but it's just because it's overused so much. But, you know, I she did a really good job in terms of outlining things that do occur. You know, the unsolicited advice, you know, the reminder to be grateful, jealousy, making it about them, jokes, labeling, awkwardness, shifting the attention, and, you know, that these if you just look at these, whether it's a parent or not, and extrapolates to this relationships, these are really annoying things. I just want you to listen. Just listen to what I'm telling you. I think is the underlying message. And you know, we crave that love, and we look to our parents for guidance. We look to our parents for support, and whether that's a biological parent or an adoptive parent or just somebody who's taking on the role of a parental figure in your life. But you know, to be fair, you know, parents, I think, do the best they can. They do the best they can. And they have their own crosses to bear and their own, you know, issues. And I don't think there's a specific category, but I think these are things that you know, adult children report making it difficult to talk about their problems in their lives that they're encountering when their parents employ one of these tactics or use one of these triggering words or statements or create these awkward, you know, scenarios. But again, you can really extrapolate this to interactions with your spouse, with your significant other, with your friend, all of this stuff. But, you know, to be fair to parents, you know, they have no manual, they have no rule book, and, you know, we're all perpetual students, and we're all learners, and, you know, it's something that, you know, we figure out as we go along, and, But I wanted to bring this up because I think a lot of this, just the answer from so many different people, when there's borderline pathology in a parent, narcissistic pathology in a parent, these are very common things that will occur, and these are very common things that are part of, in the work of like marriage and family therapy and couples therapy, and just family dynamics. Again, I think all of us just want to feel heard, and we want to feel validated, and we want to feel that our point of view matters. And sometimes our point of view is wrong, and sometimes our perspective needs to be shifted. And it's not making excuses, and it's not making justification. It's just pointing out that if you're a parent, that these are some of the things that maybe be aware of, that if you're doing this with your child, and if you're a child, and you have an interaction with your parent, or you have interaction with your parent, any of this sounds familiar, this is something to talk about either in individual therapy with your therapist, how to approach your parent, or even approach your parents about. But I think a lot of times, when you're dealing with narcissism and borderline, it's really about when you're talking about the elephant in the room, and that's where the awkwardness comes in, and those reminders to be grateful, and the labeling, making it about them. I think they all of these kind of combine when you put those two pathologies together. So hopefully this answered a lot of people's questions. I'm sure there'll be plenty more, but I know everybody likes the personality disorders, but I just found this article to be really beneficial and really applicable, because just outside of an article, this is stuff I hear on a daily basis. So until next time, feel free to reach out to me through psychologyunplugged@outlook.com. You can get a hold of me through Psychology Today. You can follow us on Instagram at psychology_unplugged_. You can contact me directly at 617-750-9411 East Coast Standard Time in the United States. Until next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, be well, and I will talk to you guys next week. All right, thanks. Bye, guys.